Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan, the host of Midpoint Monday. Tomorrow is Election Day. Today, we'll hear from some of the presidential campaigns. We'll hear surrogates from the Clinton and Trump campaigns. I've also invited Gary Johnson and Jill Stein on, but I have not yet gotten confirmation that they'll be here. I'd like to hear your thoughts on the election, so call in at 813-239-9663. Here's the number again, 813-239-9663. You can also email your question or comment to dj@wmnf.org. You can text us at 813-433-0885. It's the last call-in show before Election Day, so we'd like to hear your thoughts. Here's a listener comment from our last show.
My name is Daniel. I'm calling about wondering if there's a conflict of interest between a police department being a polling site and the Fraternal Order of Police endorsing a presidential candidate, regardless of who the candidate is. It is Donald Trump, of course. But
well, that was a listener commenting about our last show. Later on in the broadcast, I'll give out a number for you to leave a voicemail. You can always listen to previous shows and comment on the stories on our website, wmnf.org/news. You can join the conversation on Twitter or Facebook at WMNF News. I'm going to first play this recorded interview I did with a surrogate from the Donald Trump campaign in Florida, and I'd like to hear what you think about what he says. Christian Ziegler is the Republican state committeeman for Sarasota County. So listen to what he says, and then we'll talk about how you feel about what he says after this interview.
You know, we've had a great race so far. I think Florida's definitely leaning towards Trump, but, you know, with a day to go, everything counts tomorrow. I mean, we can talk about all the polls we want. The only poll that matters is Election Day. And with this race being so tight in Florida, we need to do everything we can to get out the vote tomorrow and ensure a Trump victory.
I'm seeing numbers for early voting and for vote by mail. It's looked very close in the past. I think Republicans have had a slight edge. Right now, it's very close. Either Republicans or Democrats take the lead on different days, it seems. Why do you think that, I might put it this way, the Democrats seem to be catching up a little bit on before Election Day voting this year in Florida?
Well, you know, typically I think the Democrats actually, with the vote by mail and the early voting, you know, have a better, you know, path or better numbers at this point. I think that when you look at the Republicans, they are up with early votes. When you combine early voting and apps and vote by mail, we flipped 10 counties that were majority registered Democrat to majority registered Republicans over the past 2 years. I think the Democrats over the past 4 years have lost 400,000 votes. So I actually think when the Democrats look at these numbers, they are a bit worried. They were all very confident a couple weeks ago. And now when the numbers are coming out, when they're seeing the voters go to the polls, they are starting to get worried from at least everything I've read and what I've heard. Now, the Republicans, we can't take this for granted. I mean, we got to put our foot on the gas. And, you know, I don't want to win just by, you know, a percentage point. I'd like to see Trump win by 3, 4, 5 points. And there's a lot of people that haven't voted in the past that weren't included with all these projections and all these numbers in the past that are coming out to vote because they're excited about voting for Donald Trump. So what the numbers we're seeing, we're excited. We're pretty optimistic with what's going to happen, at least in the state of Florida tomorrow. And it should be an exciting day.
We do see at some Donald Trump rallies, there are very large crowds at some of them. But it also seems that that contributes to what you were saying about the voter enthusiasm for Donald Trump. But there are also Republicans, mainstream Republicans, who are disappointed and are either without very much motivation voting for Trump or maybe not voting for Trump at all, not voting for your nominee at all. What would you say to those voters that are on the edge about whether, you know, they're definitely Republicans, but they're not so sure about Donald Trump?
Well, you have a guy that, you know, he's rightfully, you know, causing people to say, what's he going to do when he gets in there? Because he's not an establishment guy. He's not a predictable guy when it comes to how's he going to play in Washington. You know, he's one of the few candidates that have been a nominee that isn't part of the system. He's an outsider. He's a businessman. Now, when you look at Donald Trump and you're a Republican, you're maybe sitting on the fence and trying to decide who you're going to vote for, I encourage you, all you need to do is look over at the Supreme Court. And the magic number is 75. And that number is the average age that either a Supreme Court justice passes away or retires in history. And we're going to have up to 5 Supreme Court justices that reach that age in the next 8 years. So do you want Hillary Clinton really nominating the court in setting the path for, you know, all of this cultural change and the activist judicial branch? Or would you rather have Donald Trump in there, who has put out a list of conservative judges that he would consider? I think it's a no-brainer when you start talking about the Supreme Court. And that really is the big issue at play, because these justices, they get appointments for life, and it could totally change the fabric and the direction of America.
I spoke with someone from the Clinton campaign who said that Republican women are turned off by a lot of the message that they're hearing out of the Trump campaign. Have you found that as well? Is that something where you are having to do extra work to get Republican women to support Donald Trump?
No, I mean, at least the women that I'm working directly with, they're excited. I mean, some of his biggest supporters that I can think of around the state that I work with are women. You know, when you look at Donald Trump, this isn't a women male issue or anything like that. He is a anti-establishment candidate, and he's going to shake up the system. So anyone that's frustrated with government and how it's been run, you really need to take a look at Donald Trump. And, you know, I would counter and say to that Democrat that you spoke with, you know, they have some big issues. If you look at the highest performing demographic, if you will, are people 65 and up. And they're almost reaching their levels of 2012, even before Election Day, voting in Florida, whereas the weakest groups are African Americans that tend to lean Democrat. And also millennials, that's actually the weakest group when you look at the voting blocks that are coming out. Millennials are not going out to vote. They are not excited. And I know everyone knows that Barack Obama, he depended on the African-American vote and the millennial vote to get elected. And both of those groups are performing very, very poorly in the state of Florida. So they have some really big issues on their hands.
Your nominee, Donald Trump, is saying that the election system is rigged and the media are rigged. Are there examples in Florida? Is Florida's vote going to be fair, or is it rigged?
Well, I mean, I hope it's going to be fair. I mean, we're fortunate that obviously we have an elections office in Florida, at least at the state level, that's, you know, controlled by a Republican governor. But when you go down to these individual counties, obviously the elections are run in the counties. So in Sarasota County, for example, we have a very fair and a very amazing supervisor of elections. But then you start looking and you look over at Broward County, and there was an example just 2 days ago where the supervisor of elections, they were illegally opening up mail-in ballots without authority, and thousands, maybe tens of thousands of ballots were opened in Broward County. And it took the Republican Party of Florida to take action to make sure that stopped. And then she basically backed off of what she was doing and realized that it was an issue. But, you know, we have to trust our system, but we also have to verify with our system. And that's what the Republican Party is doing around the state of Florida, and that's what we're going to continue to do.
That verification, does that include having people out at the polls on Election Day watching who's voting and so forth?
Yeah, it does. I mean, both parties, you know, they'll have poll workers, if you will, that are inside, and they've gone through training, and they're inside the polling place making sure nothing, you know, shady's going on. There's canvassing boards that really oversee the ballots. And then you have people that volunteer at the polls, outside of the polls, that can also, you know, just keep an eye on, make sure there's no voter fraud. I mean, we're fortunate in Florida. I don't think it happens as much as it does maybe up in the Northeast. I've been involved with races up in the Northeast where I've seen it firsthand, and it can get pretty aggressive. But luckily down in Florida, again, we have a Republican governor overseeing the statewide elections office. And then our counties, you know, a good portion of them are controlled by Republicans as well. And we have some great supervisor of elections. So hopefully it doesn't happen, but it's up to all of us as citizens, as voters, as party activists, to really keep an eye on our polling places and make sure, you know, everything just goes down fairly and, you know, legally.
The race in Florida is looking very close. The race nationally is looking very close. Donald Trump said he would accept the results of the election if he wins. What happens if the day after it looks pretty clear that Hillary Clinton has won the election? Will Donald Trump accept those results?
You know, I can't speak, obviously, on behalf of Donald Trump. I mean, that's something that you would have to ask him personally. You know, he's one of the few candidates that I've actually worked directly with Donald Trump for a little bit last year. And I was able to experience the individual. And I will tell you, I'm very close to this team. I'm very close with high-level members of his team. And Donald Trump, he runs his own program. He's his own man. He's not scripted. He's not controlled by consultants. So I can't say what's going to happen after the election. You know, right now we're just focused on Tuesday. We're focused on getting out the vote and, you know, hopefully getting a victory large enough to where it's not contested and Donald Trump can go right in the White House.
You mentioned not scripted, and I think that that's a lot of the appeal that Donald Trump has to a lot of people, is that he's a different type of candidate, but that also kind of lends itself to an unpredictable aspect. And it's that unpredictability that some people are nervous about when it comes to things like the metaphor having your finger on the trigger of nuclear weapons and so forth. Does Donald Trump have the demeanor to be president?
Look, this guy, I mean, you want to talk predictability. Look at his businesses, look at his career, employing tens of thousands of people. The guy has been a successful businessman. So when you start saying, oh, he maybe can't, you know, have his finger on the nuclear trigger, or what, you know, does he have the temperament to be president? Just look at him as a businessman. Look at his employees, tens of thousands of employees that he has personally taken risk and provided for so that they can achieve the American dream as well. But he's had a lot of success in business. His brand is probably one of the top most recognizable brands in the entire world. When you start talking about individual brands, this guy has been successful in the business world, and I have no doubt he'll translate that to politics, because when you want to be a successful businessman, all you do to be successful is you have to make good decisions and you have to delegate. And that's what he's done as the head of his the Trump Organization with all of his individual brands, and I would expect to see the same thing happen when he's president. So, no, I'm not worried. I mean, you know, when you compare him to Hillary Clinton, for example, and all the corruption coming out of her, you know, emails, and then you start looking at John Podesta, who is her campaign chairman, saying, you know, hey, we need to dump these emails, and the FBI reopening an investigation. That is a lot more concerning, is actually having proof of someone taking advantage of the system versus a businessman that's had a lot of success running an organization.
The Trump campaign has said that they are concerned that if Hillary Clinton is elected and there's an FBI investigation, what would happen if the president is being investigated? But Donald Trump is also facing charges of child molestation of a minor and so forth. So is that a concern that he will face these charges potentially of a 13-year-old, I think, at the time this person is accusing him of essentially of rape?
Yeah, look at this. Okay, so this case, you know, nowadays anyone can sue anyone for anything. And this case, I think, was filed originally in California, and then it was thrown out, and now it's filed in New York again. My question for everyone is, when you look at this case, I don't know the details. I wasn't there. It seems to be a he said, she said case that, you know, should be looked into, and I'm assuming the system's going to look into it. But here's a question. Why, if this occurred in 1994, is this case being filed in June 2016 in the middle of a presidential race once you have a nominee? So that's a question, is why does someone step forward at this time? I don't have that answer because I don't know the individual. I don't know what the motivation was or what the specific, you know, instances or issues are. I don't know. There's a system that will obviously look at it, but I would say, you know, two things are clear. Number one, you definitely can bring a lawsuit against anyone for anything at this time. And then number two, why is that case being filed so late in the game? And I've been a part of the system. I know both sides do the same thing. They try to find individuals, disgruntled employees, a lot of times if you own a business, or just individuals that maybe you have a past with, or maybe not even connected with, and try to get lawsuits filed so you can make the news. So, you know, I don't think that I haven't seen any proof. I haven't seen any hard proof outside of he said, she said. And I just question the timing of this lawsuit and why it was filed so late in the game.
Christian, those are my questions. Is there anything else our listeners should know about the Trump campaign in Florida?
No, I just think that, you know, it's exciting. And obviously Donald Trump has made Florida his second home. He's got a lot of business. He's got a lot of employees in Florida. He's been to Florida a lot. His rallies are generating a lot of interest. People are excited to come out and vote for Donald Trump. And we truly have a grassroots inspiring candidate this time. And I think people are excited to go to the polls. And I just encourage everyone, you know, if you're a Republican, you're a conservative, you're an independent that's looking for someone to shake up the system, and you're looking for, you know, a good candidate to go up there and really, you know, as he says, drain the swamp inside the Beltway, Donald Trump's the guy, and we need to make sure everyone goes out and votes tomorrow.
That's Christian Ziegler, a Republican state committee man in Sarasota County. He also does digital marketing. He was speaking on behalf of the Trump campaign in Florida, and we'd like to hear what you have to say. 813-239 9663. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:21 in the afternoon, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. Christian Ziegler said that that Republican women will support Donald Trump. He said that he expects the vote to be fair in Florida, and the reason he gave for that is because Republicans run the voting apparatus in Florida. So, for that reason, he expects it'll be fair. He also said that he can't speak for Trump about whether he'll accept the results of the election if he does not win. He called Trump predictable. And so we want to hear what you have to say about some of those issues. 813-239-9663. If you want to email us, you can email us at dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. We have Michael in Tampa on the line. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Sean. I'm honored you take my call. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm honored that you called. What do you have on your mind?
Thank you, sir. In regards to the last caller, okay, Trump is basically, he blames everything on the trade deals. In reality, the issue with jobs going overseas, it has to do with greed. And Trump is the epitome of greed. Long story short is that he's the poster child that the giving tax breaks to the rich doesn't work, because he's gotten the only tax return proof we've gotten shows he's lost $1 billion. He's gotten $1 billion in tax breaks. What does he do with that? He buys China steel. The previous caller is saying, oh, he hires thousands of workers in Florida. That's not true. He actually imports workers. He has these worker visas. He only hires foreign workers so he can save money. So he's the epitome of greed. He's not showing the taxes that proves that. And, he talks about nationalism. Oh, you know, we're going to make America great. He's all about making other countries great so he can get rich.
All right. Thanks for your thoughts, Michael. I appreciate that. Thanks for the call. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. And I want to let you know, in just a few minutes, we're going to take some calls right now, but in a few minutes, we're going to hear from Terry O'Neill. She's the president of NOW, the National Organization for Women. She's also a surrogate for the Clinton campaign. So stay tuned for that. You'll want to listen to that interview as well. But I do want to go now to Dan in Tampa. Hi, Dan.
Thank you, Sean. Hey, that Republican guest that you had on, as he said, it is important that we have the Supreme Court nominees. And what's more important is that it is Hillary Clinton that appoints these people. If you listen to Donald Trump, what he said was he's going to appoint judges that will overturn Roe v. Wade, which means, like I've said to people, God forbid this would happen to them, but if your daughter or loved one were to get raped, that would mean they would have to bear that child. Regardless, you have our own state senator here, Marco Rubio, going around saying, well, if you're infected with the Zika virus and your child's going to have the deformity, and we know this, you should have to have the baby. We're not going to help you. We're just going to make you have the baby.
U.S. Senator.
That's one of the main reasons that we should be electing Hillary Clinton right there. And he talks about Trump's accomplishments. He forgets all of his failures as well, and he's had many failures. Number one, I'd like to point out to the veterans, this is a man that took 4 deferments for a bone spur on his foot. I mean, you know, I hear people, oh, he'll die for America. He had his chance, and he passed on it 4 times. Taxes, how come he can't get not one CEO from the Fortune 500 to back them? You're talking about cutting their taxes in half, but yet you can't get one of them to back you.
All right, Dan. I mean,
this should ring a bell. This should ring a bell with people out there, for God's sake. I just don't understand how it doesn't.
All right, well, we'll see in about 36 hours.
I'm not saying the system's perfect, but and I want to make a few more points here real quick.
Quickly, please, because we have lots of people on the line.
The last time the elections went down, the Republicans, I believe, had a 5% advantage in early voting. This time, the Democrats actually have a lead. And you have an enormous amount of Hispanics that are turning out to vote. And I'm sure it's not for Donald Trump. So, you know, they're nervous. And when you hear the gentleman say, well, we have, these Republicans, well, he's right. Republicans are running the vast majority of the state. So it should be a fair election, you would think, right? You're not going to let the other guy win if you can help it.
Okay, Dan, sorry to cut you off. We have to move on. Thanks for those thoughts. We're going to go to another call right now. Jim in St. Pete. Hi.
So your caller, Chris, I guess his name was, the Trump guy?
Yeah, he was a surrogate for the Trump campaign, Christian Ziegler. He's a committee man for the Sarasota County for the Republican Party, yes.
Yeah. He seems sincere. He seems like he actually believes all this stuff that he says. I just wonder, how is that possible? It's either that or they're lying. I mean, there are two different, and there are obviously a lot of them who don't believe what they say, and they clearly are lying, but you know, it's amazing that the people believe it. I assume they do, that they actually believe it, and I'm just astonished by that. That's really all I had to say.
All right, excellent. Thanks so much for that call, Jim. I appreciate it. And we have some people still on the line, but I am going to move on, and I want to hear this. I would like you to hear this interview with Terry O'Neill. She's the president of NOW, the National Organization for Women, and she's also with the NOW Foundation and the chair of the NOW Political Action Committee. She's a surrogate for her Hillary Clinton campaign. And I want to tell you, too, that I've invited Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, have not heard back from their campaigns today. So let's listen to this interview with Terry O'Neill, the president of NOW. In the meantime, give us a call, 813-239-9663, or you can email me at dj@wmnf.org about what you think about this interview or about what our last guest said. This is Terry O'Neill from NOW.
We are a 50-year-old grassroots women's organization. We have about 280 chapters around the country. Of those, we have 51 state chapters. We do recognize the District of Columbia as a state internally, so we have 51. NOW's mission is actually to take action, meaning policy, meaning to pass legislation and then to implement the legislation. So to take action through intersectional grassroots organizing to lead societal change and promote feminist value.
Well, let's talk about some of the legislation. What are some things that you think might be coming up in the next 2 years that you're going to be looking out for, either to try to block or that you're initiatives that you're trying to push forward?
So we're working very, very hard on a number of pieces of legislation. One is the so-called Each Woman Act. It's an acronym standing for Equal Access to Health Care. And what it does is stops the blocking of insurance companies covering reproductive health care for women, including abortion care. Right now, there's a thing called the Hyde Amendment. It gets attached to a must-pass appropriations measure every single year, and it blocks Medicaid dollars from being used to cover abortions. Abortions cost $500 and up right now. And if you're low income and you're on Medicaid, you don't have $500 hanging around. We believe that all women should have equal access to reproductive health care, and that women's reproductive health care should not be blocked any more than men's reproductive health care should be blocked. We get that there are religious objections to abortion. There are religious objections to vasectomy. You don't see efforts to stop men from getting vasectomies under the law. You shouldn't see efforts under the law to stop women seeking reproductive health care that they need when they need it.
What's the appetite in Congress for that? I know that there's even been pushback for groups that provide abortion services from getting any federal money. So now you would like to expand that to actually fund abortions using federal funds. Do you think that might be possible in the next Congress?
I do. You know, it's very fascinating. The coalition that is being led by the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Health and other organizations that has looked into this, what we find when you ask voters about abortion care, they may have ideological sort of attitudes about it, like, well, abortion is wrong or abortion is a woman's choice. But overwhelmingly, they all agree that if they know someone who has an abortion, this is what they want. They want it to be safe. They want it to be non-judgmental. They want it to be adequately informed by accurate medical science. They want it to be, they don't want it to be blocked, and they want it to be covered like any other form of insurance. So we believe that this is a moment when, in fact, the voters are with us. Now, the Republican leaders in Congress, and I say this as a nonpartisan person. It now is a nonpartisan organization. It is factual that it is the Republicans in Congress who are viciously attacking women's access to health care. Those Republican leaders have done their best to, for example, shut down Planned Parenthood clinics, but not just Planned Parenthood, all the Title X clinics that are equipped to provide reproductive health care. There was a member of Congress who actually said, when we shut down the family planning clinics, he was asked, where will the women go to get their health care? One thing he said was, there's dental clinics for reproductive health care, for breast exams, for STD screenings, for birth control, for abortion care. Give me a break. So these guys who know nothing about women's bodies, nothing about women's health, are doing their best to stop women from accessing the health care that they need. This is becoming increasingly obvious to voters. I think that the strong national support for women's access to basic health care is one reason why the Democratic platform this year includes strong support for the Each Woman Act, the Equal Access, and why Hillary Clinton has stepped up and said she is in full support of equal access. So I think this is a moment when we can overcome the minority. They have control, they have power, but they're a minority, and right now we are still a democracy. So I think we've got a road ahead.
You mentioned Hillary Clinton. We'll talk about the presidential race in just a moment, if you don't mind. But let's look at the Supreme Court and what types of cases that would affect women might be coming up in the Supreme Court in the next session.
Well, you know, it's entirely possible that a case that would test Roe v. Wade would come up. Now, last year, the Supreme Court came out with a hugely important decision, striking down the clinic shutdown law in Texas, and they struck it down on really good grounds. What they said was, the Texas law is special regulations on abortion clinics, and the court said none of these regulations have anything to do with women's health. One of the regulations was the corridors have to be a certain width. If implemented, that would have forced the abortion clinics to literally bulldoze their facilities and rebuild with wider corridors in some cases. So stuff like that. And the Supreme Court said, if you're going to impose health regulations on medical facilities, they have to be related to women's health. This wipes out a whole range of state level, what we call TRAP laws, targeted regulation of abortion providers. That was just Texas. That was highly fact dependent, that case. So there are other cases that are bubbling up from other states that I think may come to the Supreme Court in the future. This is why we need 9 justices on the Supreme Court. It is also why it is beyond outrageous that Mitch McConnell has targeted our first African-American president and said, we are not going to allow him to do anything. McConnell had as his own purpose when Barack Obama was elected in 2008, Mitch McConnell said, my purpose is to make him a one-term president. And when he failed at that, he said, my purpose is to prevent this president from actually achieving any legislative initiatives. Well, now Mitch McConnell is saying he's going to prevent the president of the United States from even having his Supreme Court nominee considered. Even considered by the Republican-dominated Senate. That's anti-American. That is a violation of the Constitution of the United States, and it does not escape the folks that I work with, and the now activists around the country that I work with. It has not escaped our notice that this is an attack on an African-American president, and we believe it is racially motivated.
And you say racially motivated and an African-American president, but it doesn't sound like it's going to stop there. People like Senator McCain are saying that whoever's president next time, we can't let the Supreme Court get more liberal. That sounds like there's a lot of senators and Republican senators who say that if Hillary Clinton is elected, there might not be a nomination that's confirmed for Supreme Court. Your thoughts?
I just think that Mr. McCain and Mr. McConnell and they need to wrap their brain around the fact that people who look like them and think like them are not the only people in America. That in fact, there are far more of us who believe in equality, who believe in expanding opportunity for everyone, who believe in a minimum wage that is not a starvation wage, which it is today, but a minimum wage that would actually allow you to put food on your table and even maybe set aside some savings for your kid to go to college. We don't think that that is asking too much. Mr. McCain evidently does. Mr. McConnell evidently does. We will swamp them if we can. And one of the things we have to do is get dark money out of politics, because it is absolutely skewing who gets power in this country. And in a democracy, it should be the voters that determine that.
We're speaking with Terry O'Neill from Now. How is dark money in politics a women's issue?
It turns out it's absolutely huge. If you look at what has happened since the Supreme Court opened the floodgates of corporate financing for elections, since 2010, what we have seen is these waves of extreme conservatives moving in to take over state legislatures and moving in to take over the House of Representatives. Now in 2014, they moved in and took over the United States Senate. What they do once they're in office is they press to shut down Planned Parenthood. They refuse to consider increasing the minimum wage. And let me just say for a moment, the minimum wage is very much a women's issue, because 2/3 of minimum wage workers are women. And here's something that a lot of people don't know. 70% of tipped workers in this country are women, and the tipped minimum wage is $2.13 an hour. The vast majority of women in the restaurant industry are not working at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and making good money in tips. They're working at Denny's and IHOP and Olive Garden. And on average, they're bringing in $5 to $6 an hour. That includes tips. So the minimum wage really needs to go up. These guys have blocked every effort to increase the minimum wage. They block every effort to make childcare affordable so that families, moms and dads, can feel like their kid is in a safe place while they go to work to put food on the table at low wages. So it's very much a women's issue.
Well, it's November, so of course we're going to talk about the presidential election. Has Now endorsed a candidate?
We did. Yes, we endorsed Hillary Clinton early on, very enthusiastically, and we are really, really excited. We are on the verge right now of electing the first woman president of the United States of America, which is amazing. But from my perspective, what's even better is that she is an unapologetic feminist. She stands for women. She has spent her entire career fighting for women's equality, fighting to empower women and their families. And she's not embarrassed, and she's not apologetic, and she's not running away from that record. You know, what she says, if fighting for affordable child care and paid family leave and paid sick days and equal pay for equal work, if that means playing the women card, deal me in.
I've been to some Donald Trump rallies, and I've seen some stickers, pins, T-shirts that someone, I think that reasonable people would say are misogynistic. How do you think that that's played out in this campaign? What the just the tenor that you've heard from people, not just opposing a candidate, but seemingly opposing a candidate and using her being a woman to kind of emphasize that?
So I think one of the things that it has done, it has driven Republican women away from the Republican Party. That is a phenomenon that I think after this election is over, the Republicans really need to take a good look at how many women they've lost. And I think what the Republicans need to think about is for how many generations have they lost women. It's fascinating. In 08 and in 12, white women voted for John McCain in 08 and for Mitt Romney in 2012. They broke for the Republicans both times. Right now, the deep misogyny and the crass and disgusting misogyny of Donald Trump, which has not resulted in Republican leaders denouncing him, they denounce his words, but they support him. Women are leaving the Republican Party just in hordes. I mean, they're just absolutely, it's hemorrhaging. And right now, it looks as if the white women's vote will go for the Democrats this time.
Yet, even though that's true, it's still a very close race. It's a very close race here in Florida. It's a close race nationally. I've seen predictions based on mathematics, and you know, the 538 and so on do these mathematical predictions, and they're like, it's completely a toss-up. Florida could go 49.9%. Anything can happen. Why is it so close?
Well, I think actually there's a number of reasons. First, 30 years of bashing Hillary Clinton has had an impact. So there's no question that the effort to drive her unfavorables up has worked. Kevin McCarthy was startlingly honest about it in an interview he did some time ago. So you have that piece. But you also have a phenomenon in our country. There was a study done not too long ago where people were asked to respond to a sort of hypothetical woman politician seeking power and a hypothetical man politician seeking power. With the woman, the study respondents showed a high level of quote-unquote moral outrage just because a woman was seeking power. They did not show that same level of moral outrage with a man seeking power. And interestingly, the respondents, there was no difference in the respondents whether they were men or women responding with this feeling of moral outrage. So we have we do have quite a bit of work to do in our country to become comfortable with the idea of women being leaders. If there's anyone who's going to make this country comfortable with a woman president, it's going to be Hillary Clinton, and here's why. When she declared that she was going to run for the United States Senate after being first lady, her favorables went way, way down. She won the election. When she began serving as a United States Senator, her favorables went steadily, steadily, steadily up. She was respected by her peers. She was appreciated by the voters. She kept in touch with her voters. What do you need? What do you want? She was open. She was known inside Washington, D.C. as a workhorse, not a show horse. Although she's one of the best known, best recognized women in the world, she worked. She did her job. When she runs for president in 08, her favorables go way down. That, I think, is connected with what happens when we see a woman seeking power. But when she becomes Secretary of State in 2009, her favorables go right up again. So when she serves, when she's doing her job, people observe her doing her job and are blown away by how incredibly good she is at it and how she is really public-minded, and she's a true public servant. So I think that I'm hoping that she wins this election. It is going to be close. And for your listeners out there, we need every single vote. We need every single person to get out and come and vote. But if she wins this election, she will serve as president in a way that I think will really open up opportunities for women just because she's so good at it.
We're speaking with Terry O'Neill with the National Organization for Women. Again, with the close election, Donald Trump has alluded that he will accept the election results if he wins. What happens the day after if Hillary Clinton is elected? What happens then?
So I've heard some people say that they don't believe most of Donald Trump's followers will turn violent if he loses. Clearly, some of his followers have already indicated on videotape that they would be willing to become violent if he loses. I believe that that there will not be widespread violence. But again, it's really remarkable that we're even talking about a major party of this country where there is reason to believe that there could be pockets of actual violence if he loses. This is what happens in third world countries. It is not supposed to happen in the United States. The Republican Party made Donald Trump. Donald Trump reflects the Republican Party. The Republican Party needs to take a deep look at itself and figure out how it's going to start behaving like it knows it is in an industrialized country. And once they do, they can start being respected again. They may win elections. That does not necessarily mean that they're respected. You got David and Charles Koch doing everything they can to empower this Republican Party. Those men own what's going on right now, and they need to think about that.
There's one thing that Donald Trump said, and it goes back to a topic we talked about earlier. He said, and he walked this back a little bit afterwards, but he said that if a woman gets an abortion, there should be some punishment there.
Yes.
He did walk it back, but what do you think about that idea?
Oh, I think that if Donald Trump becomes president, Roe v. Wade will be overturned in short order. And I think that women will be criminalized for seeking abortions. And here's why. Mr. Trump's vice presidential running mate, Mike Pence, is currently the governor of Indiana. On Mike Pence's watch, two women have already been imprisoned under Indiana's so-called feticide law. The first woman, by the way, both of them women of color, both of them immigrants. So already a little bit hamstrung in being able to access the health care that they need. Bebe Shui, who is an immigrant from China, was pregnant, and she and her boyfriend broke up. She then tried to commit suicide. She actually survived, but she lost the pregnancy. She was imprisoned for feticide. She did not receive the health care she needed. She didn't receive the mental health care she needed. She didn't receive the support she needed. Instead, Mike Pence's Indiana made her a criminal. That's disgusting on the part of Mike Pence, and he would be our vice president. Now, the other case of Purvi Patel, who became pregnant and was frantic to end the pregnancy, could not penetrate Indiana's web of anti-reproductive rights. The clinics were shut down, the clinics she might have gone to. The pregnancy progressed and got more and more expensive to terminate. She couldn't find a clinic that she could afford where she could terminate this pregnancy. She turned to an online source to try a self-medication abortion. That didn't work. Sometime later, she had a miscarriage. She was so frantic to not allow her family to know that she had been pregnant that she disposed of the fetus. She was then prosecuted for infanticide, and both infanticide and feticide. That prosecution was later overturned by the appeals court. But Mike Pence is the leader of the state, and he fully supports those laws. And with Trump saying, yes, there has to be some form of punishment, he was telling the truth. Mike Pence has already engineered some form of punishment for women who seek abortions. This could happen nationwide under a Trump presidency.
What else do you want to let people know about the election and about women's issues?
So one of the reasons I'm so excited about Hillary Clinton becoming president is that she actually is leading one of the most progressive agendas that we've seen. She is a pragmatic progressive. My organization supports, for example, a $15 minimum wage. She supports $12. We can work with that. We'll try to push it to 15, but goodness knows it's better than the $7.25 we have today. Hillary Clinton is dedicated to making it affordable for families to get high quality child care for their kids. So no family should pay more than 10% of their income on child care. She knows how to get that done. College education without debt. Hillary Clinton's plan would do a number of things. Free tuition at state universities for four-year college for families making less than, I believe, $125,000. In addition, fully federally funded community college education, get that associate's degree. And Hillary Clinton wants to put child care facilities into our colleges because it turns out that one of the key reasons that women drop out of college, particularly at the community college level, is lack of child care. The average community college student is 28 years old and has one point something children. So Hillary Clinton looks at this and says, we have to do those pieces. The other thing she's going to do is make it easier for people who currently have crushing college debt to get out from under that debt. How is she going to pay for it? She's going to require the wealthiest to start paying their fair share. And we know from Donald Trump's example, there's way too many people who pay way too little in taxes, and they're all at the 0.01% of the income level. So she has a wonderful, steeply progressive tax plan that would shelter, that would protect families making less than $250,000. That household makes $250,000 a year, no tax increase for them. Over that amount, you have gradually increasing levels of taxation until it gets to be really high for people, you know, bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars per year. God bless them. They owe us too.
That's Terry O'Neill. She's president of NOW, the National Organization for Women, and she was speaking on behalf of the Clinton campaign for president. And I spoke to her on Friday and played it for you just now. And I want to hear what you think about it. 813-239-9663. Earlier, we heard from Christian Ziegler, the Republican state committee man for Sarasota County and a Trump supporter, a Trump surrogate. And we had Marie Ann email in that your guest, Christian, says that he trusts the Republicans to run the election. I would ask him why 1.7 million ex-felons are barred from voting in Florida, many of them Democrats. So that's the question from Marie Ann in cyberspace out there. So thank you for that that email. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org. If you want to call in, you can call 813-239-9663. We've got a few people on the line we're going to go to in just a minute. You can text us at 813-433-0885. We have someone named KK Donnie, who the only sentence this person wrote was baby killing lady. That's the only message. Thanks for that message, I suppose. And let's go now to the phones. We have Lewis in Bay Pines, who says he's kind of Hillary supporter. Lewis?
Yes, but my question is that something simple, what both of the candidates cannot answer is, first of all, what are we going to do? What are they going to do about the $20 trillion deficit we have right now? And also, how are they going to protect our Social Security? Those are the two questions that I have. And I don't think they're going to ever answer them, but I wanted to bring that out.
All right, Lewis, I appreciate that. And I think that I'm pretty sure that both of those candidates address that on their websites. I can't be positive. I haven't looked recently for those two specific questions, but the deficit and Social Security are your are two of your big issues, right? Thank you. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I'll look for it on their site, but I doubt I'll find it.
Okay. We'll follow up. We'll be following that issue, of course, whoever's elected the next president. So thank you for that call, Lewis.
Thank you.
Thanks. Let's go now to Kim in Sarasota. Kim, is it true you're a Trump supporter?
That's true.
Did you see Trump when he was in Florida recently?
Not recently. Actually, before he won the campaign to become the nominee.
All right. What would you like to say?
Well, I think that people really need to understand some economics. When, you know, Hillary says she's going to pay for college, when she's going to bump the minimum wage up, it's just not going to happen. There's not enough wealth to support that, so it's going to go to the middle class. When we raise minimum wage, the cost of goods is going to go up. So what happens? What happens to those on Social Security? What happens to those without a job? The cost of goods is going to go up. It's going to be a disaster.
The argument in favor of minimum wage increasing is that then people in the lower middle class, let's say, or the middle class, the working classes, they will have a lot more buying power, and so that they'll fuel the economy more when they purchase things.
Okay, and what about those unemployed?
That particular thing wouldn't help them. That's true.
What about those on Social Security?
That has
not even been addressed, that those wages are going anywhere. So the cost of goods are going to rise. You cannot put minimum wage to that standard, have small businesses. It's just it's a job killer, and it's never going to happen.
So
and the college, right now, if she's going to pay for 4 years of college, there's no incentive for me to keep my job. My husband should work, and I should have the college paid for. I mean, that's what you're going to get. We can't afford it. There's not enough wealth, you know, with the wealthy, to pay for all of these things that she's proposing. It's a dream. It's really a pipe dream.
What would you recommend then to increase affordability for college and also to help people who are unemployed or to help people who are on Social Security?
Okay, so absolutely we need to address college and the cost of tuition. Number one is books. I mean, it's a very big expense. The hourly rate, I don't think for state colleges is that high, but once you start adding in the extras, like, you know, the textbooks, that's where a lot of the expenses come in. So I think maybe we could do something with the electronic reader, something available like that to students. But honestly, I don't think state colleges are that pricey. But, you know, there's loans and there's hard work. That's always available. I put myself through school, and I did it through working. I had two jobs. I did that. So hard work, that's what I would suggest.
Kim, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
All right, let's go now to Eric in St. Pete. And before you begin, Eric, let me give out the number again, 813-239-9663. All right, go ahead, Eric.
Yes, thank you. One thing I just want to say, when I was in college, which is a long time ago, a way to work study program, the first job that my girlfriend had was in New York City. And that was going there to tell women that it was legal to have an abortion. And I think a lot of millennials, a lot of people forget, we've not had that right for women to choose for that long a time. And, you know, that we have become complacent, I think, in that. And it scares me when we have a president that is talking about repealing a woman's right to choose. I am not a Hillary supporter per se. I was very much a Bernie supporter, but when it comes down to certain issues, such as choice, I don't think there's any question that we need to get Hillary in, that we need to get the Supreme Court and make sure that Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to choose is definitely protected. That was the one point that I did want to make. The second point, if I may, very quickly, is they talk about Trump as a businessman. I had small businesses, and my biggest fear, I was in the food industry, was people like ShopRite, other chains. When they went bankrupt, what that meant, with me as a supplier, I would not get paid, usually for a year or two until I went to bankruptcy court. If I was lucky, to get 20 cents on a dollar when that got done. So what that means is for all those people and all those different projects that Trump bankrupted, being a good businessman, he screwed every working person. He screwed every subcontractor. He screwed every plumber, every electrician, every person on any job that he did. What ended up happening was that they ended up not getting paid, and they were lucky 2 years later, they got a few cents on the dollar. It became the subcontractor's job. He'd come out of pocket to pay the balance to his workers or to take that hit. Now, he's talking about being applying his business strategy to America. So, I mean, that's scared the takers out of me that if he takes a law that's legal that made him wealthy by bankrupt companies and makes that standard for America, then we're in deep, deep doo-doo.
Thank you for the call, Eric. Let's go to Mike in Tampa. Hi, Mike.
Yeah. I'd like to say I'm not against a woman president. I'm more against Hillary Clinton being president. She's for welfare reform, and that kicked a lot of people out into the streets and kicked people off of child care. And she's for a militaristic foreign policy. She's a warmonger and a war criminal. And we got a fantastic woman, one in Jill Stein. She's for a CCC type program that would put people back to work on green economy, green jobs, and renewable resources. She's for a $15 minimum wage, and she's for canceling student debt.
All right. Thanks for your thoughts, Mike. I appreciate that. Let's go now to Paul in Tampa. Hi, Paul.
Yes. I just wanted to say, if you want minimum wage to be up to $15 an hour, we need to cut the military budget and quit bombing innocent people all around the world like our government has done under the Obama and the George W. Bush administration. It's pathetic that the Democrats today are endorsing a corporatist who is going to privatize Social Security, who is a warmonger, who will put the corporations before people. That is a fact. You mark my words, she's privatizing Social Security. She's putting conservative people on the justices on the Supreme Court. And her record is clear that that's what she is. But she was able to play the race card on a lot of fools. And it's a big race game right now. I'm considered a racist when I say Obama's not doing anything about the pipeline going up in North Carolina. I'm a racist for saying Obama's dropping bombs on innocent people all over the world. I'm a racist for saying Obama continued George W. Bush's tax breaks for the rich. I'm a racist when I say Hillary Clinton doesn't have anything that she is for other than corporatism.
Who's your candidate, Paul?
Unfortunately, it's Donald Trump because he's the only one that I have a choice for. Jill Stein and any third party is not going to win. I'm putting my vote for Donald Trump because he is the populist candidate. Whether you are for him or against him or whatever it is, he did not steal the election from Bernie Sanders.
Do you think that Donald Trump would reduce the military budget and raise the minimum wage, as you started out your comments by saying?
No, I do not. But I am certain that Hillary Clinton will also increase it. And I'm certain that Hillary Clinton will do a no-fly zone in Syria and try to be the aggressor of the war against Russia. I'm positive of that.
All right. Thank you for that call, Paul. And I probably don't have time to go to the other people on the line. I thank you for calling in. Everyone who called, thanks. I appreciate that. I want to thank, if you texted or emailed, thank you as well. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of WMNF News Midpoint Monday. Tomorrow at noon, your hero Mark Bureau will host Midpoint Tuesday. If you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, if you're still on the line or if you haven't called yet, give me a call now and I'll play it next week. It'll be like a time capsule to hear what people were thinking right before the election. 813 813- 238-8001, extension 114. You can also join the conversation online at WMNF.org/news. You can join us on Facebook or Twitter at WMNF News. I want to thank our engineers, James Rossi and Frank Knox. Stay tuned for great music on Flea's show and all afternoon long. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota. And I want to thank everyone who has already donated to WMNF. If you still want to make that donation, you can donate at WMNF.org. Thanks for listening to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. See you next Monday, and happy voting.